Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, September 28, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, they got to the finish line. Incredible. Regular season done.
I legitimately did not think I'd see the day. We were in the doldrums of April and May. It was ugly. You were going around with your proclamation that they probably wouldn't play at all. And here we are, Buster. We got a fat week of games coming up. I am beyond excited. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling great. Yeah, we our Sunday night group is going to be broadcasting two series. So we're going to be doing on Tuesday night, the Yankees and the Indians. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be doing the Braves against the Cincinnati Reds. And that those to me are like the two most intriguing series because the potential for upsets. Okay. And I don't know if you could really look at the Indians, if the Indians beat the Yankees as an upset, but the Yankees with all their money, with Garrett Cole starting game one and having it go through Shane Bieber, those will be great series. So spending a lot of today preparing for that. In the American League on Sunday, the fight was for seeding. Cubs playing the White Sox. The White Sox trying to position themselves in the middle of the American League.
Chris Bryant belted a grand slam in last night's game. Let's see if he can get a little rally started in the second against Reynaldo Lopez, and he drives one in the air, deep left field. It's got a chance. Gone. Long gone. Chris Bryant with a solo home run. Cubs lead 1-0. Almost cleared the bleachers and left.
Pat Hughes on the Cubs radio network. The Cubs win that game 10-8. So the question was whether or not the Indians would win and pass the White Sox. And you know what? They had a big comeback in the sixth and seventh innings.
Franmil Reyes coming to the plate with two on and nobody out. In the air, center field and deep. Reynolds back. He's out of room. It's out of here. And the Indians come roaring right back. It's a one-run game. Oh, Franmil Reyes, did he ever need one of those? Line drive, right field. That is going to get down, and that's going to go to the wall. The Indians take the lead. Carlos Santana with his third hit of the day, his fourth run batted in of the afternoon, and the Indians are up 7-6.
Reyes get it done.
Pops it in the air to deep center. Reynolds will settle under it. Santana will tag. He comes home to score. And the Indians have scored three times in the seventh and lead it now 8-6.
Yeah, so the Indians win on the last day of the season, and they will host the Yankees in the first game of the playoffs, first series of the playoffs. In the National League, two spots were up for grabs in the 18 field. The Giants were in the running. They faced the Padres, and they fell behind in the top of the second.
High fly ball. Way out there. Car rushed. Ball going, ball gone. That's a home run at the very, very, very top of the bleachers. My gosh, what a shot. Number 15. Hey, Will Myers is back. The quad feels pretty good. 1-0. My Padres.
Ted Leitner, 97.3, the fan, and Mitch Moreland drove in a run in the top of the third.
And the pitch to the left-hand hitter is hit in the air deep down the left field line. Dickerson going back, looking up. That is off the wall. It'll get a run home and put the Padres in front. But Moreland is going to have extra bases and RBI double here in the top of the fourth inning. And the Padres lead it 2-1.
So the Giants eliminated. The Phillies had a chance to make the playoffs on the last day, but it didn't go well.
The 1-2 to Renfro. Breaking ball laced in the left field. That's going to be a base hit. Nate Lowe around third. He's going to come home and he will score. The throw comes into third. Wendell is safe as he slides in ahead of the tag. It's an RBI single by Hunter Renfro. It's 3-0 Rays.
And the final score there would be 5-0. The Phillies eliminated. That sound from 620 WDAE. The Cardinals, going into the last day, needed one win to get into the postseason. And Colton Wong got him going with a crazy play.
That one back to the mound. Knocked down by Freddy Peralta. Picks it up. Throws it away. One run is in. The second run's going to come in to score. Wong down to second, and the Cardinals have jumped out 2-0.
Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio, and here was the final call.
First pitch, swing, and a tapper over the mound. Glove by Wong on to first, and it is over. How about the St. Louis Cardinals into the playoffs? Congratulations to Mike Schilt and company. Cardinals win it, and the final 5-2 a postseason berth for the second straight season, their 30th playoff appearance all time.
And because the Giants and Phillies lost, the Brewers also made the playoffs. What a finish to the regular season for Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals.
Soto, that's going to get through for a base hit. Trey Turner heads for third. And Juan Soto just took a big step in the batting race. One for one today.
That's going to do it for Seth Lugo. Is that going to do it for Juan Soto? His average will go to 351. He go play a few frames in right after that, and then a hug from his hitting coach.
And Juan Soto, a 351 batting average, and he is the National League batting champion. What an incredible season for the 21-year-old, despite the fact that the Nationals did not make the postseason. Some other news and notes. The Red Sox announced that Ron Renicki won't return as Red Sox manager in 2021. Chaim Bloom, who heads up baseball operations for the Red Sox, indicated that at the moment, Alex Cora is not on their radar. That obviously could change with one phone call. We'll be talking about that in a second, coming up with Tim Kirchen. The Angels fired general manager Billy Epler after his fifth consecutive losing season. Now, before we get to Tim Kirchen and to Sarah Langs, check out the latest episode of the CFB podcast with Herbie Pollack and Nagandhi. LSU and Oklahoma were the big losers over the weekend as the SEC is underway and the Big 12 is looking rough. You can catch Herbie, Pollack, and Nagandhi on Mondays and Wednesdays throughout this crazy college football season. Download and subscribe to the CFB podcast wherever you get your podcast. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Scene heads rejoice.
Noodle-a-luck!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, I think we ought to start with this big picture. How does that sound?
That sounds great. It's a really big picture too, Buster, with all these games and all these series. I can't wait, but it's a really big picture.
And the fact that they're even at this point, you know, at the beginning of the summer camp, when I was asked, okay, you know, what do you think the chances are that that they get through the season? The you know, what are the chances they actually start the season? And I put it at 5% and 0%, you know, based on what I was hearing at the team level. And I think we got to tip our caps to everybody across baseball who made this work. And I think even the most skeptical people in the game were surprised at how well the players and the staffers and the athletic trainers and all the people who were involved dug in.
Yeah, I'm really impressed, Buster. I wasn't at 5%, 0% like you, but I wasn't significantly higher. And I was talking to a lot of people out there who were really discouraged about getting to the finish line. I got a lot of 20% will make it. And now it appears we will. And it's mainly because everyone said, if we don't do a better job of this, we're not finishing the season. So teams like the Indians and teams like that, that just said, look, we're not messing around here. You got to follow the health and safety protocols. Otherwise, this season is not going to end. And I am so pleased that we are to this point, because there were several times I didn't think we would make it. And now let's keep our fingers crossed. We can do another month here and finish what could be a spectacular October in baseball.
How amazed are you that only two teams fell short of 60 games?
I would have bet my house that several teams would have never made it to 60 games. I thought the Cardinals would end up at 50, and they could have played two tomorrow, today, I'm sorry, in Detroit if need be, and they would have played all 60 games. I would have bet anything. The Marlins and Cardinals are not getting to 60 games. And they did. And not only did they get their Buster, they made the playoffs. That's what makes their runs so incredible, is they were harder than everyone else, maybe self-imposed, but to play that many games and make the playoffs, a real tribute in a way to the Marlins and Cardinals.
Before we get to the playoff series that are coming up and that will start on Tuesday, almost all of them on ESPN and ABC, let's talk about some of the changes that we heard about yesterday in baseball. The Red Sox announcing early Sunday that Ron Renneke will not return as manager in 2021. That's not a surprise. It surprised me, the wording of the Red Sox announcement saying that the search will begin immediately for the next manager, because I kind of feel like that search involves one phone call, Tim.
Yeah, and I was a little confused when Chaim Bloom, who's a very smart man, basically said Alex Cora is not on our radar at the moment. And maybe he has to say that before the search actually begins, but Alex Cora is beloved in Boston. He did a spectacular job there, and I don't see the downside of saying, all right, he got suspended for a year. When his suspension's up, we're gonna hire him to run the team again. And amazingly, they're not that far away from being a contending team if they spend some of that money to go get some pitching. So yes, to me, that's a one phone call thing, and we'll see what the Red Sox do.
Well, you and I are biased because we worked with Alex at ESPN. We know him. He's a friend. But he also, Tim, is one of the most talented managers that I've ever seen. And I personally think if the Red Sox don't, pick up the phone and call him, they're crazy. Like I,
right.
Because someone's going to get one of the best managers in baseball.
Right. And someone is going to hire him for 2021. I really believe that, if the Red Sox don't hire him, because again, his communication skills are really, really good, and his feel and understanding of the game and people are really good, and that's what managing is all about today.
The Angels announced that Billy Epler, their general manager, will not be brought back. It's funny, during the course of the year, I started to hear around the edges that, you know, they were going to bring him back for 1 year, but in the end, they decide to move on. There's so many rumors about Dave Dombrowski. You know, as always with owners, they always zigzag back and forth between prototypes. And, you know, Billy Epler, when he was hired, was a young up-and-coming general manager. He got the payroll in order. He got the farm system in order. But clearly, they have struggled to pull together pitching, and everyone is wondering about Dave Dombrowski, the veteran general manager who's got world championships under his belt.
Yeah, and, you know, Billy Epler, when you have Mike Trout on your team and you have that kind of star power on your team and you don't make the playoffs and you have an anxious owner who has spent an enormous amount of money over the years to bring in top flight players, you got to make the playoffs, and especially in a season with 16 playoff teams. So, and you bring in a new manager with Joe Maddon, who's supposed to make the difference, and even that didn't work. Something has to happen, and that's why I wasn't surprised by Billy Epler. But yes, Dave Dombrowski's MO is the same. He comes in, he makes your team better immediately. He usually goes a long way in the playoffs. He doesn't always leave the team in the greatest of shape, but sure, you have to take a look at someone, I think, with a more veteran hand here moving forward to see if they can get this team straightened out.
The Phillies don't make the playoffs again. And after the game yesterday, Bryce Harper was answering questions from reporters about what's to come. He talked about other teams in the National League East bidding on JT Realmuto. And he was asked about Matt Klentak, their general manager, about whether or not he'll be retained. And he said, well, I'm not the owner. I don't have to make that decision. There certainly was not an endorsement there. It would not surprise me if the Phillies moved on, because you were talking about the Angels' track record since Billy Epler took over. They haven't made the playoffs. The same is said for Matt Klentak.
Yeah, and Buster, I mean, I agree with that. And look at the talent on the Phillies. Look, I understand they had a historic historically bad bullpen. And when you have a historically bad bullpen, you're simply not going anywhere. However, with the other star players they have on their team, and then to get Alex Bohm up and have him play that well, and to bring Joe Girardi in, a guy who makes the playoffs every year, and you have that kind of payroll, and you have 16 teams in the playoffs, and you don't make the playoffs, and you finish under 500, somebody has to answer to that, and that's usually the general manager. So we'll see where it goes from there.
Sandy Alderson will be the guy who heads up baseball operations for the Mets if Steve Cohen's group gets approved. Everyone wondering about Brody Van Wagenen and what his future is. I got to believe that at some point, if Steve is approved as the Mets owner, that Brody will proactively go to Sandy and say, look, you know, we'll work this out. I'm on my way out. His 2 years, they went all in. They spent a lot of resources, Tim, and you just framed it with the Phillies, 16-team playoff field, and yet the Mets could not get in.
Right. And again, Buster, it's the same explanation. Sorry, but there's no excuse for not making the playoffs when you're the Mets and you have 16 playoff teams. Granted, their pitching was decimated starting with Noah Syndergaard. We all understand that. But a lot of other teams, including the Rays, had their pitching decimated and they had the best record in the American League. It's just not good enough when you have that kind of star power, that kind of starting pitching to begin with. You build a bullpen like that and you don't make the playoffs in New York. That's not good enough. And I think with the friction and the, you know, the awkward nature of Sandy and Brody, I think just logically from a distance, you have to think a change is going to be made there. And Steve Cohen, I've heard a few things about him and most of them are good. And he's simply a brilliant man and he's not going to allow the Mets to flounder here. And we'll see. I would guess there would be a change at the top.
All right, so let's talk about the playoff series, but we're going to do it in a different kind of way. I want you to look at the 8 series, and let's do like a draft. Like, you pick a series, and we'll talk about it. Then I'll pick a series, and we'll talk about it a little bit. You know, in terms of a series that most intrigues you, what's number one for you?
Well, thank you for giving me number one here, Buster. It's normally your way to take number one. Just kidding, Buster. No, I'm taking the Indians and the Yankees because it's a great 4-5. Come on. You got Shane Bieber against Gerrit Cole in game one. How could you possibly get better than that? To me, the most dominant pitcher in the game last year against the most dominant pitcher in the game this year. And of course, whoever wins game one is facing an elimination in game two. That's the beauty of a 3-game series. So I'm going to start with the Yankees and the Indians, and you can have the next two. That's how interested I am in this.
And you took the obvious number one. I feel fortunate that our group, our Sunday Night Baseball group, will be broadcasting that game on Tuesday night. What a matchup. That's going to be so much fun. I actually picked Cleveland in this series. Who'd you pick?
I picked Cleveland in this series also, although I picked so many places. I'm not sure I did it in every place, but I like the Indians. They've won 8 out of 10. They've started to score some runs, but again, the Bieber factor alone. Buster, 22 walks, 121 strikeouts. It's ridiculous. He's been clearly the best pitcher in the American League this year, but I caution people. We did Gerrit Cole's game the other night, and let's not forget he's been pretty darn good in September. We just continue to compare him to the Gerrit Cole who went 16-0 with a 1.78 ERA the last 22 starts of last year. Maybe he's not that guy, but he's still really, really good.
Well, and I think you would agree with me on this. When we talk about the Yankees, it was difference-making down the stretch when they didn't win enough games, when they got beat up in Buffalo, when they lost the game at Fenway Park to the Red Sox, and they wound up being the 5 seed instead of the 4 seed because now they play outside their home ballpark, and they're just a completely different team, Tim.
Yeah, it's truly amazing how some things have gone. The whole American League has totally confused me this year, Buster. There have been, I think at points, I had five different teams being the best team in the American League. This is the best team in the American League. And then I would change my mind the next week. That's how crazy this is going to be going into October, especially in the American League.
All right. The number two draft pick. I'm going to let you pick three. We're just going to go back and forth. I've got the Cincinnati Reds against the Atlanta Braves. I think the Atlanta Braves are good enough with the way that their rotation has come together down the stretch. Ian Anderson behind Max Fried and Kyle Wright after working with a performance coach. His last three starts have been really good. Like, that team with that offense is capable of winning the World Series. And yet, you know what? They're vulnerable right away in this matchup against the Cincinnati Reds because, as we talked about last week, Trevor Bauer, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray. This is a great series.
It is. I mean, the Braves have been the most productive offensive team in September, and it's not really close. When Ronald Acuna Jr. is like your third hottest guy going into the postseason behind Freddie Freeman and Marcell Ozuna, that just shows you the firepower that the Braves have. But we also know, Buster, you win in October with great starting pitching. The Nationals won last year because they took those three great starting pitchers and said, we're going to use you guys every day. We're going to pitch you in relief. And Bauer's going to say, hey, count me in. I'm going on short rest. And if you need me in relief, I'm going to do that too. And Castillo, until his last start, had been fabulous in September. Sonny Gray is a bulldog. I really like where the Reds are right now with their pitching. But 1 through 9, I don't know what you do with that Braves lineup. It's that good.
What's the number three pick, Tim?
All right, I'm gonna go with the Marlins and Cubs.
God, you're stealing my picks. Man, go ahead.
There are only 8 choices here, okay? I'm taking this because the Marlins got outscored by 41 runs this year, and they're in the playoffs. They shouldn't even have finished the season with the way the season began. 9 different starting pitchers in the first 9 games. 27 different pitchers in the first 9 games. Don Mattingly didn't even know the names of some of the players on his team. And not only did they somehow recover from that, they made the playoffs. And now they're playing the Cubs, who have been a terrible offensive team until last week, until the weekend. They scored 25 runs in 5 games against the Marlins. We did their game Friday night when they just pounded the White Sox. And if they can find their offense at all, Chris Bryant finally got going. If they get Rizzo, Baez going, and you've got Darvish, Hendricks, and John Lester, suddenly they're a pretty interesting team. And the Marlins are just interesting by definition to be in the playoffs. And, of course, we know they've never lost a playoff series in franchise history. They're 6-0.
And I tell you what, right now, Chris Bryant, he seems mad in a good way. He's got a major chip on his shoulder. When he was doing a Zoom call with reporters the other day, he was asked about social media criticism or some such thing. And his response was, I don't give a, you know, SH. We can't say it on this podcast. And then you saw his reaction yesterday when he hit that home run, Tim. He's got a little fuel in the tank right now. Number 4 pick in this draft. I got Milwaukee against the Dodgers. The Dodgers are in an absolutely no-win situation. They were clearly the best team during the regular season. They are prohibitive favorites based on talent, and yet they face the Brewers, who have a couple of really good starting pitchers. And I really believe this. I mean, we talked about how good of a manager Alex Cora is. If I had to pick one guy to manage one game for me, it would either be Terry Francona, who, as you know, is not going to be managing the Indians at the outset of this postseason, and the other would be Craig Counsell. And they have two unbelievable weapons in their bullpen with Josh Hader and Devin Williams. What do you think about that series?
Well, I like the Dodgers in that series, and I would really give the Brewers a chance if Corbin Burns was 100% healthy and pitching game one on full rest, and Brandon Woodruff was on full rest pitching game two. I would give them a chance because Devin Williams and Josh Hader are weapons that almost nobody has out of the bullpen. But I'm also worried about their injury issues to their everyday lineup. you look at their lineup certain days and say, how can this lineup run with that lineup with Dodgers? So I think this is a more intriguing matchup. It could have been better, but I like the Dodgers here, obviously, because of the firepower they have and their dominant starting pitching.
And we'll run through quickly on the other ones. Your next pick would be at number five?
I'm going to say the Twins and the Astros, because that's the series that we have. The Twins record at home, Buster, is 24-7 this year. And the Astros have the worst road record of any team ever to make the playoffs, 281 winning percentage. So it seems like this is a complete mismatch, but this is baseball, and I know the Astros aren't even close to what they were at this time last year, but they're still intriguing that they're the Astros. They've come through all this. Dusty Baker takes another team to the playoffs. I'll take that one next.
I've got Oakland against the Chicago White Sox. Curious to see if Oakland can move forward, and I'm curious to see how the young White Sox hitters react to the postseason. Who you got with your next pick? We got two series left.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Padres and the Cardinals. The Padres, if Denelson, Lamet, and Mike Clevenger are healthy, and that's a big if at this point, that is a very dangerous team. But to underestimate the Cardinals now, after they somehow got through this season and won, and with the starting pitching they have, led by Jack Flaherty at the top, that's a pretty interesting series. So I'll take that one next.
And number eight, I had Tampa Bay against Toronto. Look, Toronto, to me, the only chance is if they ambush the Rays in game one, because I think there's a clear difference between the two teams. What do you think?
Yeah, starting pitching difference is significant. Hyun-Jin Ryu can beat anybody, but after that, I'm just not sold on the Blue Jays pitching. And eventually, we're going to have to give the Rays a whole lot of credit for going 40-20 and pitching the way they do and cobbling that lineup together the way they do and playing the game really better than any other team.
Before we go, let's talk about the major awards. I'm recusing you from the conversation, National League Cy Young Award, because you have a vote in that. On top of that, I think Trevor Bauer really took over that, that contest last week with that last great outing. We would both agree that Shane Bieber is going to be the American League Cy Young Award unanimously, I'm sure. Who you got National League and American League MVP?
Well, it's really close. I've got Freddie Freeman as the National League MVP.
Yep.
Even though he's got other MVP candidates on the team, I just think his steady ways all the way through make him the MVP for me. But it's a toss-up in the National League, and it's a toss-up in the American League also. But I'm going with Jose Abreu. I just think when you look at his slugging, total bases, hits, RBIs, was leading the league as in all four of those. Also, the absolute leader of that team, not just for the young Latino players. Everyone on that team follows that guy. So I'll take the two first basemen as the MVPs. But again, both leagues way up in the air, way more than one MVP candidate in each league.
What about the rookies of the year?
I think you have to go with Devin Williams with the Brewers. I mean, my goodness, that was absurd, the season he had, almost unprecedented. I don't care if he's not closing games. Those are Little League numbers. And that changeup is unhittable. So I'll take him, and I'll take Kyle Lewis with the Mariners. I think Luis Robert was the leader for some time. Then he hit an 0-28. So I'll go Kyle Lewis and feel pretty good about that.
All right, Tim. I appreciate it. Always good to talk with you. Thank you.
Okay, Buster. See you in the postseason, I hope.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, we start with this. Now that the regular season numbers are in the books, what's your favorite statistic from the 2020 regular season?
You know, it's very hard for me to pick one thing.
For you, it's like picking among kids, right?
Exactly. You know, and I feel like in the last 24 hours, I've written like three different versions of articles for MLB.com that were basically me trying to pick this for different teams and everything. But what I'm going to go with is the White Sox going 14-0 in games against left-handers. That's games started by left-handed starting pitchers. Obviously, short season. We knew there were going to be some things that hadn't happened before. I'm glad that it was something like this and not someone hitting 400, you know, just in terms of record books and everything else. But they're the first team to go undefeated in games started by pitchers of either hand. Obviously, you're not going to have anyone going undefeated in games against right-handed starting pitchers. But 14-0 when a lefty started.
That's pretty cool. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 10. So another one of my favorites, but I wanted to save it for here, is that the Blue Jays made the playoffs this year without a single 10-year veteran on their team. So we've been hearing about the Baby Jays. We've seen Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Yunito Gurriel, everybody, right? And this is a great way to quantify it. So they're the first team in the divisional era to make the playoffs without a single player appearing in a game for them with 10 or more years of experience at the major league level. And the third overall, the 1915 Phillies did it and 1912 Red Sox did it. But that was also, I mean, there weren't many years to choose from. It was pretty hard to be a 10-year vet back then. And that wasn't playoffs and everything else. That was straight to the World Series. But the most experienced Blue Jay this year was Anthony Bass, who was in his ninth year. So I think that's a really great way to sum up what we got from the Blue Jays this year and what we saw from them.
Number two.
Number two is 351. So I know this is the day to talk about postseason teams, and we will. But we need to give some love to Juan Soto for that season he just had. Even though the Nationals missed the playoffs and, you know, had one of the worst records by a defending World Series champ. So Soto hit 351, becoming the fifth youngest player to win a batting title and the youngest in the National League. He's still 21 years old. We had all the jokes with, oh, Gleyber Torres is only 21 last year. Here we are with Juan Soto. He had a 695 slugging percentage, which is the highest by any player as young as him in a qualified season in the modern era. And he had a 201 weighted runs created plus. Only three players 21 or younger had hit higher than 351 in a season. I mean, what an absolutely outstanding year for him.
Number one.
Number one is three. So you keep saying best pitcher on the planet for Shane Bieber. I keep thinking about that and it keeps being true. And there just keep being more and more stats to back that up. So he won the pitching triple crown, which is leading or at least having a share of the major league lead in wins, ERA, and strikeouts. He's the first pitcher to do that, not just in his league, but for all of the majors since Johan Santana in 2006. And the first Indians pitcher to do that. The Indians have had one triple crown winner just in the American League as a pitcher, 1940 Bob Feller, but that wasn't league-wide. And Bieber's strikeout rate this year was 41.1%. That's strikeouts divided by batters faced. So it's just how many batters, what percentage of the batters you faced did you strike out? So that's really close to 50%, which is insane. And it's a record for a qualified starter in a season, breaking a record that, of course, was set last year by Gerrit Cole at 39.9%.
Yeah, and we've got a Bleacher Tweet coming up in which one of the listeners asked the question about Bieber's performance measured against history, and we'll get to that in a second. Before you go, Sarah, I got to ask you, who do you think is going to get through this playoff?
I'm picking the Dodgers. I'm just going with it. I think I picked them from the beginning of the year, although I may have said Yankees over Dodgers at the beginning of the year, and then I might have said the same thing on the trade deadline show. But I know I had the Dodgers in it, and I just feel like with everything that's happened in 2020 and everything going on, you know, maybe it'll finally go right for the Dodgers. And if you look at the National League field, they are far and away the best. You know, we'll see what happens if they were to get to the World Series and face one of these strong AL teams. But looking at the NL field, I feel pretty confident in the Dodgers, except for the fact that anything can happen and nobody's going to sleep over the next 5 days. And if the Dodgers don't sleep, then who knows, you know?
Well, I was just going to say, I've known you a long time, and just hearing your answer right there, you said you feel pretty confident about the Dodgers. I would have guessed your confidence based on your response. I would have put it at a 2 out of 10. Maybe that's just related to the best of three nature of the start here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to know. I mean, it's a three-game series. We watch three-game series all the time. Great teams have bad three-game series all the time and are still really great teams, so if we were heading into a normal October, I would definitely feel more confident about it. But I think this confidence is more, these are the Dodgers. They haven't won since 1988. It's got to go right at some point. Maybe this different playoff format and everything else is what it is that'll finally make it gel somehow.
All right, Sarah. Great to talk with you. We'll talk to you down the road.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. A big bag of tweets as we head into the postseason. First up, we've got Greg Steinbrecher at Greg Steinbreck writes in, most rebuilding teams ditch their manager who led them through the rebuild once they turn a corner, but do you think the Marlins will stick with Mattingly, and is he a manager of the year candidate?
Yeah, he definitely is the manager of the year in the National League, given everything that they went through with their coronavirus outbreak, having to play the doubleheaders to make up the games, and the fact that they're such a young team. And so I think Don Mattingly is the manager of the year, and I don't think there's any plans to change managers there. You know, Derek Jeter has a longstanding relationship with him, and let's face it, one of the questions about Derek as he goes about the business of running the Marlins is, how many people does he know? In other words, how much of a network does he really have in potential managers? He knows Don Mattingly, so I don't think there's any change on the horizon.
Our guy P.K. Steinberg writes in, Alec Boehm did enough to win NL Rookie of the Year, right?
P.K., gotta tell you, Devin Williams of the Brewers would be my choice. When you think about his numbers, absolutely insane. 100 batters faced, and he struck out. Of the 100 batters he faced, he struck out 53 with that crazy changeup that he throws. He allowed just 8 hits among the 100 batters. He allowed 1 earned run in 27 innings. Devin Williams, reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers, he would be my Rookie of the Year. Boehm, terrific rookie season, hit .338, a .400 on base percentage.
Yeah, that's pretty wild from Devin Williams. Next up, we got Brian Herman at BR Herman. He writes in, hey, Buster, 2020 aside, where does Bieber's performance this season rank all time? Amidst the craziness, could one of history's best performances actually have flown under our radar?
Yeah, Brian, the only thing is, and we've been saying this since the beginning of it, you really can't compare anything that's done in 60 games over anything that was done over a much longer season. Even the strike season of 1981 was almost twice as long. You know, the strike, the season that was impacted by the end of a player strike, 1995, they played 144 games. These guys played just 60. But when you look at his performance within those 60 games, according to Baseball Reference, his adjusted ERA plus is 281. To put that into perspective, you know, you look at that compared to some of the great seasons put up all time by starting pitchers over the course of a full season. I mentioned Bieber was at 281. Pedro Martinez, 99, which it was the best pitcher I ever saw. His adjusted OPS plus was 243. Pedro in 2000, 291, a little bit higher. Jake Arrieta had that incredible second half in 2015. He was at 215. Jacob DeGrom 2 years ago, 218. Greg Maddux, 95, 260. Bob Gibson had a 1.12 ERA for the Cardinals. He was at 258. Bieber at 281. He's incredible, and he's also incredibly dangerous if you're the Yankees facing him in the first round.
Next up is Adam Wolf at Adam Wolf Horn writes in, hey, Taylor and Buster, maybe it's because I've had more time to watch, but I've noticed a lot more bad calls from the home plate umps this year. What kind of review is done of the umps that call the playoffs?
Well, they'll tell them how they grade out, and a lot of the umpires really welcome that feedback, but it's not going to change. You know, they set those they set the rotations as the postseason begins, and they don't vary from them based on grades in the first two rounds. I mean, there are umpires who, and I'm not even going to get into the names, who are known as really bad umpires, and they stay in the rotations, and they show up in the postseason.
Sounds like Adam is team robo-ump with me here. Next up, we got Debbie Gammons Brown. She writes in, the Phillies tanked, rebuilt, got Harper, have a room full of money, and chronically underachieve. What is the problem, and who will be held accountable?
Yeah, I think there'll be changes in the front office. And Debbie, you framed it. You know, they tanked for a number of years. They just didn't wind up with, for example, what the Houston Astros wound up with or what the Chicago Cubs wound up with. They didn't wind up with that caliber of players. And as we sit here today, they just have a lot of holes. And it looks like if they're going to try to compete next year, part of the what's got a paper over the team is the money of ownership. Now, I would say this, because they're a big market team, there are going to be so many great buy opportunities in this offseason. And I suspect the emergence of the Mets as a potential big market buyer might push the Phillies to do some things.
Last one for Monday, Aaron Peters at Aaron Takes DC writes in, all things considered, what grade are you giving the league and the players this shortened season as we head into the playoffs? And I guess that's kind of an on the field, off the field grade. How was the product? And then how was everything else around it? How would you grade it out, Buster?
Well, the fact that they got to this point, you'd have to give them A++. I mean, really great job by the players, you know, buying in, you know, all the sacrifices that were made, players who stayed away from family members, coaches who stayed away from family members to keep this this train going. You have to give them A++. I think the overall product, I'd say C-. It was some of the worst that I've seen. There's no getting around that. And I think we really learned this year the impact of fans in the stands on players. I just don't think the adrenaline was the same. I don't think the focus was the same. And I was saying to someone the other day, a longtime agent, how whenever the fans get back in the stands, man, it's going to be a love fest. Like, the players are going to be like, yes, we got you back. The fans will be excited. I think the players will be even more excited.
Oh, yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the postseason fares without fans. I mean, we've seen the NBA, you know, these guys, they can take it up a notch, but...
Yeah, and I think it'll be that way. Like, I think the postseason is a little bit different. You know, you're going to see guys who, you know, who need the big stage to push forward. I think of a guy like Javier Baez. I think he's going to like the fact that all of a sudden you're going to have the juice, the adrenaline of elimination games, and that'll help all those guys.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Keep them rolling as we get into the postseason here. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And I know, you know, sometimes we get the podcast out, it's generally around midday. It kind of depends on my schedule, but we're going to try and angle to get it out a little bit earlier since we have so much going on this week.
Sweet. And we'll dig a little bit more into these series as we go forward, starting in tomorrow's podcast. That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color, something we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.